aids a certain dollar amount over the list price of the hearing aids. That's what makes them a preferred provider. So we used, our benefits used to be $2,000 to a preferred provider, $1,500 to a non-preferred provider. So to try to steer our minors to preferred providers, we reduced the amount to, of a non-preferred provider to $1,000 as of January 1. We're hoping that helps the preferred providers get more minors, which actually the majority of the minors do go to a preferred provider, but that just swings it a little bit more, and we have maybe a little more control over what the minor is paying and the level of service they're getting. And it'll actually reduce the cost a little bit because we're not paying $1,500 out to a non-preferred provider.
Chairman?
Yes.
On another topic, I am drafting a bill for the Miners Hospital that talks about the statutory limitations on the number of employees where she has executive director and a full-time assistant. The fact that there is the greatest number of miners are split between two counties across the state, and it's in Campbell County and Sweetwater County. The Miners Hospital has put a part-time person in each location, and thus having two part-time people fill in the one full-time position. And basically the bill would be to allow them to allow for a one and a half, so to speak. And I think that some of the concern was the amount of workload and what's necessary with the health savings account issues and other things that prompted that. But if you could just talk briefly about that.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hastert, thank you. Yes, currently our statute says that we can have one full-time executive director, one full-time administrative assistant. The board has opted to break that one full-time administrative assistant into two locations. I have a part-time person in Gillette. Rock Springs has a part-time person in that office. We can see going forward where we may have to really up our workload and require minors to re-enroll for their benefits every year because of the health savings account, which then is you know, we have right about 8,000 minors registered. We're working with EBMS right now, who we contract out to pay all of our claims, to figure out a way to not make all 8,000 register again every year, because honestly, a lot of these minors never use the benefits. They're registered, it's there, it doesn't cost them anything, it's there when they need it. So we're working with EBMS to possibly just have them re-up their benefits the first claim of every year, something like that. But we can foresee that we may have to up our manpower, because right now we're stuck really at 20 hours for each administrative assistant, and that may be not enough to take care of future plans.
Anything further?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
Just a question for you on looking at your I think it's on the 900 series, and so you're on EMBS is kind of who runs that, and I'm just wondering, the medical assistance administration fees are about 12%. Is that by contract, or is that a fairly comparable administrative fee, or is that high or low, or how do you feel about it? Are you getting a bargain with EMS?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Perkins, no, personally, I don't think we're getting a bargain. But the last time we went out for bid for this position, once again, and I advertised in Billings, in Wyoming, in Casper, in Denver, they were the only person who even responded. And I actually was able to get them down. The contract before this was $350,000 a year. This one is $315,000. Because we took over the registrations in our office. We've taken over all the updates to the registrations. So we assumed a lot of that. So I was able to reclaim some dollar amounts in that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Marianne.
Thank
you. Appreciate your work. Thank you for waiting. Next up is Water Development Commission.
Budget number, agency number 29.
It's a big day for you. Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Harry Labonte. I'm the director of the Water Development Office, and with me today is Andy O'Dell, who's the fiscal officer for the agency, and then I have a couple, three employees. Jody Pring, hold your hand up, Jody, runs the River Basin planning section. Barry Lawrence is in charge of the planning division in the agency, and then Brian Clerkin heads up our construction division. So, potentially in the past we've had questions with regards to the Gillette Madison project, and Brian is the project manager on that project, so if need be, they can respond to questions. Mr. Chairman, I thought just as kind of an easy way to go through the budget, I would just step through the budget on a page-by-page basis. And
please.
I'll start with really, I'm on page 3, which is a summary of the agency's budget request. As you can see in the lower right-hand corner, $8,581,505 is the request. That handles the office's operations with regards to personnel, expenses, and such. And then, of course, I think you're all aware that the projects that are brought forward for consideration come through a separate process with the omnibus planning and the omnibus construction bills that you handle each legislative session onto their own. As you can see, the agency is an authorized level of 26 employees. We do have an exception request before you to reduce that number to 25, and I will get into that here shortly. Okay, continuing on, Mr. Chairman, then, page 4 shows the statutory authorities in terms of the various programs that have been created for water development. And when you move then to page 5, we have listed the programs that operate within the agency. And I'll take just a brief minute to go through those. New development is, as the name indicates, is for the construction of new projects, new infrastructure around the state. That is funded by Water Development Account 1. And we have three separate accounts that provide the bulk or basically the project funding within the agency. Rehabilitation is, as the name indicates, rehabilitating existing infrastructure. A good example of that is rebuilding irrigation diversion structures, as the case may be, replacing transmission pipelines for municipalities. That is funded out of Water Development Account 2. The third program, then, dams and reservoirs, is the newer of the programs within the agency. That was created, I believe, in 2005. And is funded entirely with Water Development Account 3. It's looking to build reservoir enlargements of 1,000 acre-feet or larger, or new reservoirs of 2,000 acre-feet in size or larger. We then have an active river basin planning program that's been really ongoing since, I believe, 1999, where we go through each of the basins, review all of the water use, the appropriations, irrigated lands, all of those kinds of things, trying to look at and answer the question, is there unappropriated water in these basins? How is water currently being used in those basins, and what we might be looking at in terms of the future? We have a small water project program, which has been really very popular, I think, for the ag community. And it really focuses on water improvements that benefit a lot of different things. One, range utilization. So we have a lot of federal land in the state, a lot of federal grazing leases. We have private lands that are also grazed. Are those lands being grazed effectively? Are there any impediments for fully utilizing those lands, and water tends to be one of those impediments, or lack of water. So we build small water projects. It can be a stock dam. It can be a stock well. There's been some erosion protection projects built out of small water projects program. But again, very, very popular with the ag community. That small water project definition is a project that has a value of less than $135,000, and the commission will fund a 50% grant up to the amount of $35,000 in that program. We have a groundwater exploration program, which was created by statute, and it works with municipalities that are wishing to improve or expand their water supply, where we will go out and provide the funds to drill new or exploration wells at a 75% cost share there. And then finally, in terms of programs, water investment management, as we call it, that is managing and paying the bills for the water assets that the state of Wyoming has acquired in reservoirs primarily. So High Savory Reservoir is a state-owned reservoir that is managed by the agency. And then we have contracts with the Bureau of Reclamation for storage accounts in Palisades Reservoir, Fontenelle, Glendale, Pathfinder, and Buffalo Bill Reservoir. And so there are separate O&M accounts that have been set up for each of those facilities, and we do manage those. Page 6.
Yes, Representative Conley.
Harry, you gave us what account 1, 2, and 3 were out of. What about 4 through 7?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Representative Conley, thank you. I should have pointed out that River Basin Planning is funded entirely out of Water Development Account 1. Small Water Project Program is funded out of either Account 1 or 2, depending on the type of project. So if it's a new development, it would be Account 1. If it's rehabilitating an existing facility, it would be Account 2. And then Groundwater Exploration is funded out of Water Development Account 1. Again, that would fall under the new development category. The Water Investment Management, each of those accounts, the way they are structured is there's generally an initial appropriation of dollars that has historically been from account one into those accounts, and then those dollars plus the interest earned along with any revenue generated from the sale of water goes back into those individual accounts, and so the hope is that they will be self-sustaining. Not all of them are like that, but that is the hope on those accounts. On page 6, Mr. Chairman, then, we were asked to provide prioritization of our programs. And you see then priorities 1, 2, and 3, rehabilitation, new development, and dams and reservoirs. Each of those are funded by their own water development account. And so while we have listed them as 1, 2, 3, I really consider those equal in terms of priority. Small water projects, number 4, river basin planning, number 5, in-stream flow water rights, and I didn't mention that under the program category, but the agency has a role with regards to the state's in-stream flows. It starts with the Game and Fish in terms of identifying critical reaches of stream that they believe an in-stream flow is needed. They forward their list to the Water Development Office. The Water Development Office files the application for a water right with the State Engineer's Office, and at that point in time, the agency, my agency, is required to conduct a hydrologic analysis to determine if, in fact, there is any unappropriated water available in that basin, and that information is then forwarded on to the State Engineer, and the State Engineer then makes the determination of whether or not to issue a permit for in-stream flow. All of the state's in-stream flow water rights are held by the Water Development Office for the state. So we ultimately end up and manage those rights that have been advanced to permit status and then ultimately adjudicated if they go forward there. That number 6 priority. Seven would be the groundwater exploration program. And then lastly, UW Water Research, which is not necessarily a program that we manage, but we do provide funding to the Office of Water Programs. And they in turn then offer those funds to professors that are doing research within the water field. So contemporary water questions that need to be addressed, that water research, we are a portion of the funding arm for that. The University of Wyoming also provides funding for that UW Water Research Program as well. So, Mr. Chairman, those are how at least the agency would rate those programs in terms of priorities, and I guess I might stop and ask if there's any questions there.
Mr. Chairman.
Questions? Representative?
I can't keep up with everything. What discussions were had about the need for more dollars in water two versus maybe one or three with the board, and has there been any action taken to look at that? I mean, I see the rehabilitation being a much stronger need around the state. Mm-hmm. Just a quick comment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's actually what has just been released is an LSO full evaluation study of the agency, and they took that question up. And there's a recommendation within that report that the legislature could consider providing different fund or different priorities or different funding amounts for the three accounts. I will tell you that in the latest round of project applications coming forward, which will now be before you next month, we had more project applications than we had available dollars both in account one and account two. Okay. And as a result, the commission with my recommendation was to look at the biennium projection, and so I'll use account one for an example. They projected that there would be about $70 million available for 2016 projects and 2017 projects, the projects that we'll handle in the next biennium. And so the recommendation was to spend in this first group of projects, the 2016 projects, about half of that amount. So the planning and the construction bills coming forward have a funding obligation of about $35 million in account one. A similar process was done in account two, where there was a roughly $11 million available. They're recommending projects in the amount of about $5.5 million. In this coming bill. So there would be equal amounts available in the second year of the biennium coming forward. But the commission has talked about, do we need to adjust funds from one account to another? That is, at least in the opinion, my opinion, and I think the commission is, that is a legislative priority or prerogative, I should say. That is not something that either the agency or the commission can do. At this point in time, the consensus that I have seen, it's been discussed but no real motion, is that they believe that I think the funding currently should be left alone in that we have deficits in both in account one and account two. And if you move dollars from account one to account two, you're going to really just make – you'll solve one problem potentially but create another one. In the account where the money is borrowed from. But I think with this legislative full evaluation study coming out, that's a question that the Management Audit Committee will be taking up and may ultimately come back to the full legislature for consideration.
Okay. Mr. Chairman? Senator.
Thank you. Could you give us let's talk to us a little bit about Water Account 3. What projects you're looking at and likelihood that you will be using, you'll be tapping, no pun intended, Water Account 3 in the coming biennium.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, we currently have 15 projects coming forward in Account 3, 15 individual separate reservoir projects. And they are all in various levels of the planning phase. And we expect that several of those may encounter what we would call a fatal flaw, that they just can't go forward for whatever reason, whether there's an environmental reason, whether the sponsor financially can't afford their share of the project, any number of reasons, whether there's an adequate purpose of need as you get into a NEPA process. But from that 15, we believe that there are 10 projects that represent viable projects. The current price tag, and this is a very, I'll say, nebulous price tag in that some of these projects are in very early phases of planning. So we do not have well-defined projects. We don't have good cost estimates. But we believe that those 10 projects will have a price tag of somewhere on the order of $500 million plus. Currently, in that account, is $160 million less the $10 million that the governor has elected to take out of that account and use that, as I understand it, for fiscal year 15 to cover the shortfall there. And at least in reading the governor's budget message, I view that as an IOU or a loan, that when revenues improve for the state of Wyoming, that those dollars would come back into the account. But as you can see, there is a very large deficit between the current balance and if we are to build these 10 new reservoir projects in the next 10 years. I have had conversations with the state budget office as well as economic analysis and the governor's office about bringing forward a more defined, I will call it a cash flow schedule. So looking at the 10 projects that we think are most likely to be constructed, when we expect we will need appropriations for each of those, whether it's for design or permitting or for actual construction, and then providing then that schedule to the governor's office, I think, to look at. It's probably more realistic plan to try to fund a little bit of those projects or dollars into that account on an annual basis opposed to waiting out to, say, year 8 and then saying, oh, we need $350 million. That's probably very unlikely. So we want to build a cash flow schedule that we can then have a conversation of how we might fund those projects. The last thing I would say with regards to reservoir projects is that we currently have 5 projects that are in the permitting and design phase. And, of course, the NEPA process is, I think, the largest impediment to building new storage in this state. And so those 5 have been advanced to that level, and we will know in the next 2 to 3 years whether we're able to complete the NEPA process on those reservoirs. So once the NEPA process is complete and we have our 404 federal permit, we will be coming back to the legislature for construction funding to authorize those projects. So I think with regards to 10 and 10, we've identified these 5 as the first 5 that will be brought forward, and you'll be hearing more about those 5 projects.
All right. Yes.
Thank you. Harry, how far out are those projects, do you think, from construction phase?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that 3 of those we will be ready to go to construction in the next 2 to 3 years. And there's a 4th one there that could be 3 to 4 years out. And then the other one, and I'll say the West Fork of Battle Creek project, that's probably going to be a year behind the rest of them. It involves Forest Service lands and land acquisition, and there's an environmental issue with the Ferris Haggerty mine that sits upstream of that reservoir. So it's got some more complications that I would want some additional time on that particular project. But I think in the next 5 years, all 5 of those will be ready to go to construction.
How much? What's the total dollar amount for those 5 projects?
For those 5, don't quote me on this number, but it's going to be approximately $200 million. We have enough in the account, the $150 million. is enough to build four of those projects if you pick the right four, the lower value projects. And by lower value, I'm saying $20 to $40 million projects. The fifth project has an $80 million price tag. So if suddenly it were to show up first in that stack or in there, then we'd probably be building three projects realistically, with the dollars that are available. But I believe that, 3 to 4 projects can be built with the funds that we have available.
Yes.
Are all, I'm not familiar with these projects. Are they all on, in the Colorado River Basin?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, we have, let's see, three of those projects are located in the Colorado River Basin.
Of these five now we're talking?
Three of these five, okay. Mr. Chairman, yes. And those are the West Fork Project, Middle Piney Reservoir, and Big Sandy Enlargement, those three. We have two projects that are located in the Bighorn Basin, and that would be Alkali Creek Reservoir and Levitt Reservoir Enlargement.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman. Just the director, so the 3 and 3 years, those are all Colorado River Basin, the first three, and they are under $150 million.
Mr. Chairman, of those three that I think are in the first batch to move forward, two of those are in the Bighorn Basin, Levitt and Alkali Creek. We think those will move faster. And then the other one will be Middle Piney Reservoir, which is located in the Colorado River Basin.
Mr. Chairman, and those three can be done for the 150 or less?
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Okay. How about, well, you said four, I guess. Four of the five can be done with 150.
Well, Mr. You Chairman... think? Five cannot be done with the 150.
Four of the five, yeah.
I believe potentially four of those.
Yeah. Okay.
And the fourth one, possibly. I've got my cost estimate. We can pull that out if you want some more detail on that. But certainly those three, potentially the fourth. But we cannot build five with the funds that we have available.
Other questions? Go ahead. Yes.
So, Director Labonte, if you had the $10 million that the governor took back, would that complete the five projects, or you're still not there?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is no. The fifth project that I'm talking about is this West Fork of Battle Creek. It sits in the Little Snake River drainage, which is Colorado River Basin. That in itself has an $80 million price tag.
Okay.
So if that were suddenly advanced and that became our first project, then we're not going to build very many additional reservoirs beyond that with $150 million. So that one, and that's the project that, again, we have the environmental issues, we have land acquisition issues, we're dealing with the Forest Service. That's the one that I expect will take longer to permit and tie up all of those loose ends. So that's the one that I think is falling out in the 5-year time frame. So that's not going to be an impact on that $150 million account three balance, because I think you're going to see other projects that are brought forward earlier than that, and they will expend that $150 million.
Okay. Representative.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming that as you're kind of working through these priorities and you're planning, that you're evaluating these costs against the number of customers potentially, or users potentially served by these storage projects, to make sure that, you know, the expenditure ultimately, it's a cost benefit. It makes sense. Am I assuming correctly that that's part of the analysis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubson, we do an economic benefits analysis, but I will tell you that with regards to, the first thing that we really have to look at in trying to bring a viable project forward, and we're thinking about NEPA all the time, and that is there a purpose and need? Okay. And invariably on our projects, the purpose and need is required because the Corps of Engineers and EPA will be saying, if there's not a viable purpose, there's no reason to incur the environmental impacts as a result of these projects. So there has to be a purpose, and invariably the purpose is late season irrigation water. When we look at these areas, the irrigators are saying to us, and we're documenting, that in fact when they get into the August time frame, we do not have adequate water supplies. That then leads us down. There is a purpose and need. Here it is. We can document that. However, from an ag operation, if you look at the increased value, we're building some fairly expensive reservoirs, and there may not be necessarily a corresponding equal ag benefit in terms of late season irrigation. If we're talking grass hay, which we are in a number of these locations, some of them it's alfalfa. We're not necessarily looking at row crops or higher value projects. So while we run that analysis and that information is ultimately available, I'm not going to tell you that the cost benefit ratio is going to be less than one, or that the benefits exceed necessarily that we can document that exceed the cost. What I will tell you though, when we get into water planning, we talk about 20 years out, 30 years out, 40 years out. But if you look at the reservoirs that were built in this state and in this country, starting back with the Bureau of Reclamation days, we've got structures that are 100 years old, and they are still providing very much needed benefits to the state here. And so a cost-benefit analysis that only looks out 30, 40 years is not going to capture that. So I think keep that in mind as we bring these projects forward.
Yes.
we're talking mostly about, well, almost entirely about water storage on these projects. And we're also talking purely state money. Do any of these projects hold any and I'm just off the top of your head, any potential benefit for hydroelectric? And if they do, is there federal money available for that sort of project?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, all of these projects will be impounding water and creating a head, and so there is a hydropower potential for all the projects. That's not something that's actively incorporated into the planning and permitting of these projects up front. Hydroelectric tends to be an ancillary or secondary benefit that could be added on at a later date. And so you won't see it incorporated in these projects at this point in time. In answer to your second question, I'm not aware of federal programs that are funding hydropower. In fact, the state's programs are probably the best bet, where water development is doing the feasibility study on hydropower projects, and then there is a loan program available through the State Loan and Investment Board for funding. But I'm not aware of a federal program funding hydropower. I'll take that back. There's a Bureau program that has looked at some very small types of hydro projects, but not on the order of these reservoir sizes, more kind of canal drop type programs.
Mr. Chairman, I was thinking in terms of alternative energy subsidies, non-fossil fuel sources of energy.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I am not familiar with those programs.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
Other questions? Continue.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, continuing on then, on page 7, you see listed are two exception requests. I will defer my description of those until we get to the actual narrative of those projects. Page 8 is the very simple org chart. Page 9, we were asked to identify any enterprise funds that we currently have, and the answer is that it is not applicable to water development. We do not keep enterprise funds. Page 10, again, is the summary of our budget table. Again, an $8.5 million request with 25 employees. And then you get to page 11, which is the narrative for each of the series within our standard budget, personnel services, support services, cost allocation, et cetera, which obviously you are very familiar with. With regards to Series 900 professional services, we've provided on page 12 a more detailed description of those. Our budget request is $250,000 for water-related research. And in that category, we include those in-stream flow hydrologic studies that are required by statute. That gets taken out of that $250,000. We occasionally use those dollars to assist in the river basin planning program. And so we have dollars there. If need be, we can undertake water-related research types of projects. The bulk of that request, it falls within the Water Resources Data System. And that is a unit that is housed in the University of Wyoming. It provides a number of benefits, and I'll direct you to page 13, where we start into the exception requests. Under paragraph A, you see a number of the benefits that WRDS provides. It's an outgrowth of the old water center. It was a portion of the old water center, and when the water center was closed, WRDS was kept intact and has been funded with water development funds ever since then. But it provides the website for the Water Development Office. It houses the state's water library, both in hard copy and electronic form. All of the reports that are generated through water development are made available through this website and are housed at WRDS. And then they also function as the state's climate office. They collect a lot of additional data besides just what water development generates. And that is all served up to the public and available through that website. And then most recently, they developed what is called the Water and Climate Web Atlas. And this was at the request of the Water Development Commission itself, in that the commission was asking the question that when we get a request for funding, we would like to know what other types of studies have been done in the vicinity of that study. And the names don't, you know, they're not always, you know, if we're talking about Pinedale, they're not always the Pinedale Water Transmission Supply Study. There are other titles that come into play. And so you can't just tell from the name of the study. And so this Web Atlas tool is a GIS product that allows you to then direct your location, and then you can direct a radius of concern, and it will identify all of the studies that have been done within that particular circle or sphere of influence. And so getting into then exception request number one, it is twofold. One, the employees of the WRDS Center are University of Wyoming employees, but the funding for their salaries comes from water development. So the first portion is that they were granted raises in the current biennium, and so to keep those raises whole, there's a request of $52,744 for salaries. And then this Web Atlas tool, this is the second piece of this exception request. The Web Atlas tool has a lot more potential. And I'll give an example of in-stream flows. So we can bring in-stream flows into this location tool and tell you where those flows are. We can start to look at all kinds of additional types of information being served up on a GIS platform. And so the commission was very interested in continuing to enhance or expand the capabilities on this Web Atlas tool. And so we are looking for an additional appropriation of $50,000 per fiscal year, so $100,000 in the biennium. So this request total is $152,774. That shows up on page 14. And certainly then the governor has recommended its approval. The second exception request, which then is described on the bottom of page 14, priority number two, is the elimination of an accounting clerk in the office. This position's been vacant for a number of years, but I will give credit to Andrea that when she took over the agency about 4 years ago and this position was vacant, she elected to operate her section without this position, and so we've not filled that position for a number of years, and we're going ahead and going to relinquish this as part of the exception request. That is valued at a credit of $102,887. And so, Mr. Chairman, I guess I might pause for questions with regards to our two exception requests.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greer.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Representative Wood. On the enhancement program here on the as part of the WIRDS budget. So the first exception request, so that's you're going to bring that into the standard budget. You're going to have $50,000 a year going forward as expenses associated with that, or was that $100,000 a one-time request?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, the way we are viewing this is that it is a one-time request, and if we want to continue that beyond the 17-18 biennium, we will bring it back as another exception request. It's kind of those professional services outside of their standard budget for WIRDS.
So then, Mr. Chairman, this is what I was assuming is, with the words, with the increase for the salary position associated with the university increase in fees, that's an ongoing cost, I would assume.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
So, okay. Mr. Chairman, I would just make a note there.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Harry, of those five employees, what percentage of their workflow is related to your department, and what portion is related to university?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, I would answer that approximately half to three quarters is a result of the work that's generated by my agency, keeping up the website, cataloging reports, answering questions from the public that's trying to access that information. The other portion of that, half to a quarter, say, I do not believe that the university would view that as a benefit to the university. It's more water data collection outside of both the Water Development Office and the university. So they do serve as the climate office. So they have a very active climate data acquisition program. And they're keeping that data, and they frequently are responding to questions, I'll say, outside of the state for climate data as provided by or for the state of Wyoming. And so they are kind of this one-stop shop with regards to that. The water library that was kind of inherited has a number of just water library data types of documents that they have, and they are the source for water information in this state. And so that is related to water development, but may not be in direct response to the mission of the Water Development Office.
Okay, Mr. Kocha.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Just kind of the same thing that Representative Greer, just reading your narrative about the salary increases for the five employees at the University of Wyoming was in 15-16. And so how did you give them increases in 15-16 then? Why don't you just use that same source?
Mr. Chairman, it was absorbed into their 15-16 budget. They had funds available that they were able to do that.
100 series funds.
Mr. Chairman, their budget is not necessarily set up in 100 series, 200 series, and so what happens is we have a contract with the University of Wyoming for this center, and we transfer these dollars to the University of Wyoming. And they were able to save some dollars from that budget that they could cover the salary increases, because they had fallen basically through the cracks. There were dollars that were appropriated for State of Wyoming employees for raises, and there were dollars that were appropriated to the University of Wyoming for employee raises. But these five employees, their salaries come from the appropriation or from the payment from water development to the university. So they were not captured in the University of Wyoming raises or block grant that was set aside for raises. And so it had to be made up out of their budget.
So, Mr. Chairman, so how are their salaries paid then? What are their salaries paid with? UW money or state money?
State money from the Water Development Commission.
Well, why wouldn't you just use that same source then if they're funded by water development for their raises?
Mr. Chairman, that is what is it proposed here, and so I wanted to point out that because their raises, their salaries had increased, we are increasing their budget by this amount.
Non-general fund.
Mr. Chairman, non-general fund. Okay, this would be funded from the Water Development Account 1 funding.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Labonte, just a question. I have a cold, so my hearing is kind of affected. Whose employees are these? Are they yours or are they the university's?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, they are employees of the University of Wyoming, but all of their salary costs come from the Water Development Commission.
Strange way to do it.
Mr. Chairman, follow up.
Yes.
So the university granted them raises, and now you have to pay it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, I would have to say in this case, I believe the communications have worked well in that WIRDS is part of the engineering college. And so the department had contacted me in advance of allocating these raises or approving these raises to say, or ask my opinion. And, of course, all other university employees were getting raises, and so he ran those raise amounts by me, and I approved those. But the $16 that were used for that were actually coming from a different part of their budget, basically the expense money and such for other things that they had saved and not spent over time. It was available for them, so we had budget. But, in fact, these were raises that were granted by the University of Wyoming.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Kevin Hibbard. When Section 320 allocated the increases to state employees, they also allocated to community colleges and the University of Wyoming. However, those contract positions at the University of Wyoming fell through the cracks. We have them here in water development. If you recall, we had this conversation with the Department of Agriculture as well. So this is just cleanup for that oversight when we wrote Section 320.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, just one.
Okay, we go to Representative Moniz and then Senator Burns.
Harry, where do these salaries show up in the budget?
Mr. Chairman, in our budget?
Yes.
Okay, they will... if you go to page 12, okay, which is 900 series money from the Water Development Commission, within professional consulting there is $773,618 allocated for WIRDS. And that includes, it is primarily salary, but it includes office expenses, some travel, and we are providing, it's a cost share situation because the university is providing the space and they are providing the IT services for this operating unit. But our allocation has been, well, let me, The vast majority of this budget involves wages, but then we have equipment, books and subscriptions, support services, which includes supplies and maintenance. We have travel, and then we have a line item where they would use outside consulting services, which is where this water and climate atlas consulting would come from. If it's approved, then they would contract out, and so that's in essence their 900 services or series dollars. But the way the transfer works is we enter into a contract for the next biennium, four words, to run their operation, and the entire amount then is transferred to the University of Wyoming and maintained in a separate account with the University of Wyoming.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
So then does that $52,774, the increase you're asking for in wages, included in that $773,618?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is no. The answer is no.
No.
It's no.
Why is it not part of your standard budget if you're going to be continuing to pay it into the next biennium?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, we wanted to structure it so that, you know, there was a salary increase. It was not included in the 15-16 budget. And so we wanted to present it to you that this is a change from their budget, and their budget needs to increase by that $53,000 number to cover that. And then in addition to that, if we want to expand the Water and Climate Atlas tool, there is a $100,000. So that's wrapped into that exception request.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I'd like to go back to the standard budget. How many offices does the Wyoming Water Commission have?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, we have, I would characterize, two offices. The main office is here in Cheyenne on North Yellowstone, and that houses 24 employees. And then we have one employee in Rawlins that is responsible for operation and maintenance of the High Savory Reservoir, and that person operates out of their home. So I count that as an office. That's a satellite employee, but we do not have office facilities there.
Okay. The reason I was asking, I wanted to make sure, because I'm looking at your rent, your space rental, and it's $658,000, almost $659,000 for the biennium. So that works out to over $27,000 a month.
Wow.
I was wondering, what kind of office space is this? This is some nice office space.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I believe that it's a nice office. It has a rather large meeting room in there that the Water Development Commission meets. In fact, Senator Hastert was at our meetings this last week. And so that was a decision that was made, I think, in the early 2000s when Water Development moved out of the Hirschler building, and it was determined to put us into lease space, and that's where we have been ever since.
Is that the old U.S. West building or whatever?
Mr. Chairman, it is north of there. If you look on North Yellowstone at the intersection of Vanda High, there's about four office buildings there.
Okay,
we are one of those.
Okay.
And then there is some space downstairs that is a separate lease with the Board of Registration for Engineers and Land Surveyors. But I would say, Mr. Chairman, probably 25% of the space in that building is taken up by this large conference room. It's a two-story structure. I would invite you out to visit if you would like to take a look at it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Do you know how many square feet the rental space is, by any chance?
Mr. Chairman, we do not, or not at this time. We can certainly provide that to you. And of course, this is a lease that's negotiated by ANI. The agency really has very little to do with, you know,
sure,
the negotiations.
Do you know what the square cost per square foot is?
You want to guess, or would you prefer to? Yeah. Mr. Chairman, we do not have an accurate number, but we can provide that to you.
Okay.
I'm in the rental business. I've never rented to the state, and I'm asking myself why not.
Well, some leases are more expensive than others here. And part of the reason why it would be good to get out of the leasing. Okie doke. Any further questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm just Harry, back on a more general thing. I'd like to get a short one or two pager where you break down Fund 1, Fund 2, Fund 3, what the sources are, what the burn rate is, and what the projects have been for like the past 10 years and expenditures on those things, just so I can put that back in perspective. I think I've seen one of those in the past, but it's been a while since I've looked at them.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, we could provide that.
Isn't it the burn rate what we appropriate?
The burn rate is just what we appropriate.
Just very rate.
Yeah.
One other question on this series of questions that Harry had about these employees out at the University of Wyoming. Are there any other employees? Do you have any other employees stashed somewhere else that in another agency that they would ordinarily be treated as an employee of that agency, but in fact are yours, or vice versa?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, let me clarify first that the 26 employee positions that we currently have do not include the WIRDS employees. Those are five separate employees. We have.
But now we just found out that they actually are your employees.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, I can't hire or fire them. they are University of Wyoming employees.
Okay, let's put it this way. Are there any other employees out there who are being paid by any of the water funds besides your 25 and these at the university?
So, Mr. Chairman, there are three other diversions of funds from Water Development Account 1 that occur. One of those, it goes to the State Engineer's Office for Colorado River Endangered Species Program participation. And, Pat, correct me if I'm wrong, but that does not fund any employees.
Okay.
We have an appropriation that goes to the Department of Ag that deals with TMDLs, and I do not know whether that funds any employees or not. I don't know.
TMDLs, is that pollution?
Total mass daily loads, yes. So it's a water quality issue,
right?
And I believe what the Ag is doing there is they're offering those dollars to conservation districts so they can collect data in terms of dealing with DEQ that might ultimately propose TMDLs on streams. And then thirdly, there is a diversion of funds that goes to the State Loan and Investment Board to fund a portion of the state share for drinking water SRF loans. So EPA appropriates, I believe it's 80% of the funds, and then the state is required to come up with 20. We're providing a portion of that. I believe that State Loans and Investment Boards pays for at least one or two employees in administration of that program. It would be primarily federal dollars that are used, but there is a portion of water development funds that do support that program. And that's a question I would better direct to Director Hill on that one.
All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. Any further questions? All right. I think we're through your budget, are we not?
Mr. Chairman, we are.
Thank you for your thorough presentation, Harry, and we appreciate all you do.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, thank you for your time.
Thank you. We're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back for State Engineer.
And if you guys are going to sidebar, mute.
Okay. And we'll I bet you haven't talked to Steve since.
room to talk. And she said that...
Okay, we're back to orders. Apologize. Thank you for the State Engineer's Office, Director Terrell.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman. If we, let me start first by introducing a couple of staff members I have here today. First, at the table with me is Ms. Cricket Hoskins, our fiscal officer. I would, I feel a little bit for Cricket. She started with us in October and has been working very hard to assimilate this budget as well as her position, and it's her first time in front of a group like this, so welcome, Cricket. In addition, I'd like to introduce Deputy State Engineer Philip Stukert and Assistant State Engineer who's managing our technical services in Cheyenne, Rick Duell. So between the four of us, and hopefully right here at the front table, we can answer what questions you may have. As a quick overview of where we're at with the agency, I'd like to call your attention to these. There should have been a little just set of graphics handed out to you a week ago, brought over to the LSO office. And there are some interesting points in there I could step through fairly quickly.
Are there, let's make sure
if that's all right, Mr. Chairman.
Are they on here? Here it is.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah, there should be 20 slides. I don't think we'll dwell on some of them very long, but have you any questions, by all means, ask away. Initially is our mission statement on page 2, a listing of our exception requests on page 3 that we'll get to, I'm sure, in the budget discussion. And then just a little history of the agency and our employment levels over the last 15 to 16 years. I just find this an instructive chart because we've stayed fairly level. Although we grew a little bit during the CBM days, that has retracted a bit, and we are now at 136 positions. And if you take out the North Platte settlement in 2003, we'd have 6 or 8 fewer people than this agency had in 1999. So we haven't grown in terms of personnel demonstrably over the years. The next page is our budget request history, which I think also is telling in that since the 2910 biennium, we've been relatively flat, and even the exception items we'll talk about today are as small as we've had in five or six biennial cycles, or the smallest. So the other slides, and I'll, when I get done with these slides, I'll give you a brief description of the sort of our reason for being. But we have a, maybe I'll do that even before we talk about groundwater. We're primarily a regulatory agency and represent the state as a headwater state in a number of interstate agreements, whether it be the Colorado River Compacts or the North Platte Decree, the Yellowstone Compact, et cetera. But we permit the use, the beneficial use of water in the state of Wyoming, and whether it be groundwater or surface water, we have a safety of dams group. We then go out, assist in proof taking, and we adjudicate those water rights that start as a permit. And then we have a staff that is almost half the agency that their job in the summertime is to regulate the use of water under our priority system. So the bulk of what we do is statutorily mandated, and our structure, in some sense, is a constitutional structure. State engineer, the Board of Control, was all part of our constitutional write-up, and we've maintained that structure for over 120 years. So permitting, adjudicating, regulating, managing our affairs under interstate agreements is the primary purpose of our of the State Engineer's Office. As we go through some of these workload charts, and again, I hope to get through them fairly quickly, although if you have questions, please raise them. Groundwater permit approvals, you can see that the red going away on that chart, I'm on page 6, would indicate that CBM has essentially gone away, at least from our shop, on a new permitting basis. We're still seeing regular groundwater permits, but the coal bed methane business has left us alone. The page 7, up until 4 or 5 years ago, we struggled because of all that work with a pretty big backlog of instruments. The blue chart on this page just shows that we've chewed away at that backlog, whether they be old statements of completion or beneficial use forms, anything related to processing paperwork related to groundwater permits. We've done a pretty darn good job of getting them down to a manageable number of documents.
So what is the time frame now if you get an application and for?
Oh, a very good question. The answer to that, to some extent, is it depends on the complexity of the application. We've been kicking out regular stock and domestic wells, the simple ones, 25 gallons a minute or less, in a matter of a few days. If somebody's really urgent and we want to get it, need to get it out in a day or two, we very likely can. If it's more complicated, if it's a big ag well that's in, and we want to make sure that we're not overlapping water rights or something, it takes a little bit of research, and it'll be longer than that. But generally speaking, we are within 30 days of an application permit coming out. The simpler, the quicker.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm being pointed to a bullet on slide 8, which says that right now we are exceeding 80% of all applications being granted within 30 days. So.
Oh. I jumped ahead.
Yeah, that's part of our strategic plan result.
Okay. So where are we now? We're on page 8.
Page 8, if you go ahead a page. This is just a bullet point list of some of the accomplishments of only the groundwater division. And if you look down about the middle of the page, you'll see that about 1,700 out of 1,900 applications in water year 15 were processed within 30 days. And I would have to say that was a slower period when CBM was hitting us hard. We were a little slower because we would get in some months 5,000 to 10,000 applications. Mm-hmm. We're not seeing that right now. So this page on the accomplishments also will describe to you some of the backlog that we've chewed away, as well as some of the field work that we've been able to do. An interesting component of our groundwater division work is they actually go out into the field and take proof on groundwater permits for adjudication. If it's a surface water permit, a ditch, a pond, a pipeline that comes from a surface water source, those are all investigated with our field staff. They're our surface water proof-taking entity. If it's a well, my Cheyenne staff goes out and takes proof. If you move to page 9, it just shows the number of groundwater rights adjudicated in the various water divisions. So we are adjudicating 200 to 400 groundwater rights per year. If you go to slide 10, surface water division activity, once again, you'll see the red went away. We permitted a lot of reservoirs for coal bed methane. That business is dwindled, and yet we still see a lot of permit activity on regular stock reservoirs and larger reservoirs.
Quick question.
Yes, Mr. Representative Greer.
So, Pat, on those, on those reservoirs, if those are reclaimed, does that paperwork go back into you? How does that work, just briefly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, yes. If a reservoir is entirely reclaimed, we should see a request for cancellation of that permit, and it will go away. Most of the small reservoirs don't get fully adjudicated, so you don't have to abandon them. You simply cancel a permit, and that reservoir is off the books.
Okay,
if you quickly flip to slide 11, again, we had a backlog, if you look back in the mid-2000s, of almost 2,500 surface water applications. That backlog as well, as we chewed through CBM and we managed our work more carefully, we started chewing away at that backlog. We do not have, it's now down around 500 instruments. These are some of the more complicated permits that may sit on file for a while awaiting either information from the applicant or it's just not ready for prime time. So that backlog also has been chewed down, and I'm really pleased to report both in here and in our groundwater that we're not a prisoner to some of those old files that we used to maintain. If you go to page 12, there's another quick summary of the accomplishments of our surface water division. Just in the last year, the application went back down. We are now processing surface water applications 92% within 90 days. Our strategic plan goal, believe it or not, on surface water apps used to be a year. They tend to be more complicated. When you get a permit application dealing with an enlargement of a ditch that serves irrigated lands, there does require a review so that we're not laying original rights on top of each other. And we've developed a staff that's pretty energetic right now and pretty good at getting those reviews done as quickly as possible. So I'm very pleased at our processing time there. We also have been inspecting dams. Our staff does safety dams inspections around the state, and we've been conducting dam owner workshops. For anybody that may have a dam that's larger than 20 feet high or 20 acre feet, these workshops and most of our dam safety work is funded through a FEMA grant. So that does not come through the general fund. We make use of that FEMA grant, and we try and burn it up every biennium because that's dollars we don't have to spend out of our general fund. That grant totals about $140,000 that we get. So Board of Control petitions, this division, as we get petitions to change water rights, they come in to the, we have an administrative division in Cheyenne that essentially reviews those petitions and supports our superintendents in the field by reviewing them for accuracy. Do they have all the right information? Are the surveys correct? Are they wanting to move water rights in a way that the statutes will allow them to move? And we deal with 1 to 200 of those brand new petitions every year. So that's 25 to 50 new ones at every quarterly meeting that we deal with. Some are approved relatively quickly or accepted, granted. Some are carried over several meetings if they're more complicated and we have to gather more information. Slide 14 is just a graphical depiction of the water rights that we have adjudicated on the surface water side. And again, each one of those is per division. So if you add all those together, you're going to have several hundred adjudications per year that we do. Wyoming is very fortunate and unique in that adjudication of a water right in our state is done through our Board of Control. It is not done in the courts as is done in many or most other states. You adjudicate a water right in Colorado and you do it through the water court. You do it in other states, you do it through district court. In Wyoming, we do it with a quasi-judicial Board of Control, which is me and the four division superintendents. It's been that way ever since we started back in 1890, and the only time that we get court involvement is if there's a disagreement over an adjudication. It gets appealed, and then it may go to court at that point. But 98% of them do not. They are adjudicated, and then that person gets a certificate for their water right. We have done on page 15... We do lots of inspections of small reservoirs. Most of them remain unadjudicated, but you can see the big blip in Water Division 2, the red line. Back in after 2010, 2011, we had a lot of reservoirs in that coal bed play that required staff to go out and inspect, make sure they were built in accordance with the terms of their permit. So that's the reason for the big jump in Water Division 2. But as you can see, even today, we were out inspecting 300 to 400 or 500 of those every year, all done by our field staff. Page 16, backlog of proofs. Every division office maintains a file of proofs that they need to go out and check. These are people wanting to prove up their use of water and get a certificate, get adjudicated. We stayed very busy on that in 2012, 13, and 14, and we are chewing down on that backlog as we sit here today. But the backlog is still, looks like about 2,500 total. So 2,500 in Division 2, or Division 1 alone, but the total, no, total is 2,500. My apology. So that's just that. When we talk about having backlogs, that's what they are comprised of. Board of Control accomplishments. We have been, as we work through our e-permit system, we are verifying the records that are in it. We verified over 11,000 certificates in the last year so that the, what's in the database matches what's in our files. Other accomplishments here deal with our backlog, our inspections, et cetera. So a lot of this work goes on in the wintertime, so if you wonder why what the people in the field are doing when they're not regulating water, they're working on records just like this, working on backlogs.
Pat, what constitutes a stock reservoir?
Generally speaking, Mr. Chairman, a stock reservoir, the de minimis ones are under 20 acre feet, under 20 feet high. Those can be filed on relatively simply. You don't need an engineer. If you get bigger than that and you're storing it, there's a bit of a chart I could show you. It's not exactly 20-20, but if right. you're 20 feet high but holding 50 acre feet, you'll probably qualify as safety dams. But then you need to employ an engineer, get designed. That's when we start creeping into what we call safety dams category. But if generally speaking, if you're under 20-20, 20 feet or 20 acre feet, those are the kinds of things that a rancher who has a D9 can go out and build with a relatively simple permit from us.
Okay. Senator Burns.
If you can go into a little more detail, because this is something, a question I've asked water commissioners for 30 years, is what do they do in the winter? If you go, but I'm usually asking that when they're cutting off my water, so they, you know, it gets kind of lost in the rest of the heated discussion. Right.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, they stay pretty active in the winter doing things such as working up records. For example, all summer they will be collecting stream flow data off of stream gauges, canal gauges, reservoir stilling wells. And to the extent, even if we collect some of that electronically, it's got to be quality checked. And then we will actually publish about this time of year an annual hydrographer report. So from October until January, they are publishing data. They are working on their annual reports, things of that nature. They will also be working at this point in time on the agency's overall annual report, which is different than just their pure hydrographer report. But they're working on equipment, making sure that when they go out in March, which is only 6 weeks away now, toward the end of March, we'll be firing up gauges again. They in the fall, the other thing they will do is go winterize gauges. We have a number of gauges around the state that either we cooperate with USGS on, we run ourselves, or part of our state network. So they are working very hard to make sure the equipment is ready to go into those gauges, that they are shut down in the fall, that they're ready to come up in the spring. They will be attending public outreach. They may get asked to meet with appropriators at irrigation district meetings, making reports there. They will be attending in the fall and the spring commission meetings. If it's the Bear River, we have some of our field staff on technical committees there, or on the Yellowstone, or in the North Platte. We have they will help us prepare for meetings on the Niobrara with Nebraska or in the Colorado. It's a good time of year to work on your equipment primarily, but lots of other demands.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
While I've got the floor and I'm asking questions, the next page where you've got the map of the stream gauging program?
Right.
I was just looking at it. I was really struck by the lack of gauging on the Powder River. I was in the southern, big eastern slope of the southern Bighorns. I was wondering if there was a reason for that.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and Senator Burns, this does not show other gauges that may exist, like USGS or Bureau of Reclamation or anybody else that may have a gauge out there. This is our agency network, and if the Powder River, I know we have gauges like on the Middle Fork and the main stem of the Powder, both above and then down toward the state line. If those are already operating and our staff didn't feel like they needed more data in between, then they wouldn't show up here.
All right, thank you.
Since we've moved to that page, that's a good segue. These are gauges of various types that we've installed since about 2005. Having come through, if you saw my exception request from the mid-2000s, We came back a few times and sought money to go out and do some of our own instrumenting. We have done that. We're no longer coming back to look for money to do that, except maybe occasionally to backstop some equipment and get newer generation equipment. But those stations are in. We even have a website called SEO Flow. You can get to through our website, or I can get you the address where these stations are now available to irrigators, municipalities, to our own staff, and they can go out and get a ditch measurement, a stream measurement. And we've found that since we've provided the data, it becomes highly addictive, and people are, if a certain diversion or gauge goes down, our phone starts ringing. So we try very hard to keep them up and running. But we've added several hundred sites to the network that we had in the early 2000s. Mm. It's been very helpful to us. Some of these data are useful to people like Homeland Security if they're looking at flooding events in the Worland area on the Great or Bighorn, for example, Saratoga on the North Platte. Much of ours went on tribs or ditches, tributaries to major rivers that weren't adequately gauged. Finally, on page 19, or not quite finally, on page 20, I'll talk about some of our budget reductions. But page 19 talks a little bit about how we're involved in interstate work. This is our Interstate Streams Division. I have five staff and have had there since 2006 who staff us at various interstate levels, whether attending committees for the Yellowstone Compact or the Colorado Compact or Bear River or Niobrara. These are the folks that are out there all the time. We have staff in there that has been improving our consumptive use calculations in the green. When we came here in 2006 and got one final position, we were the least instrumented state in the Colorado River Basin. We now have find ourselves in the position of sort of being the envy of the four upper division states because we calculate consumptive use and we have weather stations that they don't have. So I like to point at that program and acknowledge its success. So this is where our Interstate Streams group spends their time. At the very bottom, Western States Water Council, which is a group of people like me of the various Western states, meet to, in various ways, advise WGA on water issues, whether they be regional or national. I'm lucky enough to be currently serving as chairman of that group. So that's been a very much a learning and a process and an enjoyable one. Back in October, and now I'm at the very last slide, and then I'm done with my brief agency update, we were approached, as everybody was, to look at people, look at programs, look at budgets, and see what we could do, not only in this biennium, but in the one coming forward. We proposed in October, I believe, to reduce our amounts by $250,000. That is reflected in the most recent budget that I've seen and that you should have. Those, in addition to, I believe, a vehicle and maybe one other little item, are also extended into the 17-18 biennium. And that was looking at our resources from October till the end of the year. Without cutting ourselves shy in many areas or any areas, we did see if we had anything we could afford to reduce, and this is what we offered back, and it has been accepted. The very bottom note there, you'll see we've had one FTE that was not approved to be refilled, and we're not going to seek any further to refill it.
Now, let me ask you a question about Laramie County and your mm-hmm. groundwater. Your order went into effect, I believe, in April.
Yes, sir.
What's the current status on that? You know, for a while, I'm sure Representative Nicholas and I are getting a lot of emails, a lot of consternation over the whole situation. Where are we in Laramie County on that
whole
issue?
Mr. Chairman, that order was written and entered on April 1st. It was in the works before then in the event we didn't get a private agreement that came out. And you may be aware that there was a committee, I think they called themselves a steering committee, that was facilitated by the university to try and come up with what the statute allows as a private agreement to manage groundwater in lieu of an order. And I would have to say they were trying to wrestle a real monster to the ground with all the various interest groups in groundwater that we have in this county. They didn't come up with an agreement by April 1st, so we did issue our order. And that order, as you may recall, that really kicks in a year from now, in water year 2017, even though it was issued in early 2015, to allow time to put in meters that have been asked for as part of that order. Large wells, whether they be non-stock or domestic, but miscellaneous agriculture, municipal, miscellaneous water supply wells are one of the things the order does is ask for meters to go in or require meters to go in. And then starting in 18, 19, and 20, we'll get data back. So they have a year and a half to 2 years to get those meters in. We've had a little bit of pushback on that, but not a whole lot. We had a similar order in the Horse Creek area 2 years prior, and they eventually were able to get that taken care of. The idea behind the meters is if we can get the best idea that we can on how much water is coming out of the ground and being consumed, then any future orders, whether they be for permitting or caps like we have in Horse Creek, will be the best they can be. We won't be producing any more water than necessary, and we won't be overproducing if that turns out to be the case. So the other thing that order did, the other things, were it ordered the adjudication of unadjudicated wells. In other words, if you had a permit, you haven't got your well adjudicated yet, and it should be, then they have about 2 years, 2 to 3 years to get that taken care of. Then we can verify what that permit should be producing, what that well should be producing. And then they have a certificate. The other thing that we did was broke the area out into three or four different geographic zones, depending on the level of impact we had seen. Areas of severe drawdown around Pine Bluffs, Albin, and Carpenter, no more large capacity wells out of the Ogallala. They could go deeper, but not the Ogallala, that's where it's really been hit. If you're in an area with less drawdown, then there are some abilities to permit larger wells going forward if they're spaced not too close together and they have to monitor their water levels. There are a couple of areas where north of Horse Creek, primarily, where we saw very little effect of the dewatering we've seen in parts of Laramie County that really have no restrictions on permitting at this time, but they do monitor water levels and get meters put in. There is a petition right now in front of the Board of Control to change the boundaries of the control area. That should go, it's currently scheduled for hearing the 26th of this month, and that will be a time at which the board will entertain the pros and cons of changing the current boundary of the control area, which does not include, for example, the city of Cheyenne Wells, which are west of town, and see if that boundary deserves to be changed. That would be a board determination at that point. So we have been sending reminders out to people to get their meters in and get wells adjudicated, and hopefully we'll see that happen. I believe that full order, if anybody's interested, is still on our website.
I think that's correct.
Joke. So, Mr. Chairman, with that as my introduction to the agency, would you like to walk through exception items at this point, or it's your pleasure?
Well, you've done a pretty good job of kind of narrating where you're at, but if you would, we have been going kind of page by page through the budget, but
okay.
May I make that you've already hit? There's probably okay. Just let us know and then move on.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to make let's start in the budget book then, and at this point, I'm always nervous. I want to make sure my page numbers match up with yours. If you look at our Section 6 report, and in my book, it's on page 11. I need to call your attention to a correction I'd like to make,
if possible.
Where the title is Department Priorities.
Okay.
I need to ask the indulgence of the committee, as though we have priority numbers down the left side, which seems to imply that all of our that there are some more important statutory duties than others, and the bulk of our work is either statutory or constitutional. So what I would like to do, and I think what happened was that snuck through as a listing of our divisions rather than a prioritizing of our programs. And so certainly the administration, and then I would go down, bullet number two can stay in number two. While interstate streams, I think, is important, the attendance at committee meetings and things like that, I would put as a priority too. But the, when you get into unit 301, which is surface water, 201, which is groundwater, and 401, which is board of control, those should all be a one, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind. I don't know how to pick, and it's kind of like being asked which child you like the best. And these are all very important statutory obligations. So,
okay.
Our support services, can, which is at the very bottom, which is currently a six, can be a two. Then as you go and flip over onto page 12, 1401, which is our North Platte, and it should line up with the words North Platte a couple lines above. That should also be a one because that's compliance with the Supreme Court decree. And I would prioritize that very high. The last two, which are currently priorities 8 and 9, are our two professional boards that we manage in our agency. They flow through us from a budget and fiscal personnel standpoint. I had prioritized those both as a three. In their mind, I'm sure they're one, but in terms of these other statutory programs, I would look at them that way. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
We'll go ahead, and if it's all right with the committee, and just continue from there.
Sure.
The page 13 is our prioritized schedule of the exception items that we had provided you. And we can, I'd like to talk about them very generally. First of all, the total amount that was under our request of $530,000 is, as I showed back on an earlier slide, pretty low, at least in terms of our historic exception requests. Priority number one, and this might save us some time as from going through the budget pages in great detail, reflects on page 39, technical equipment for our people to continue to calibrate and maintain those several hundred gauges that we talked about. So these are not to redo that system, but to provide the equipment, some of which is very old, to allow them to manage, gauge the streams appropriately. Some of that is new technology. We have little boats that we can tow back and forth across the river these days that run about 30 or 40,000, but they are wonderful safety items and very accurate. The USGS uses them. So that's what our first priority was to make sure our field people had that work.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
On those items, so the governor's recommendation was 50,000 out of the
that's
total
correct.
Request. But when I look at the items that were requested, none of them are 50,000. I mean, how are you going to use 50,000 if that's the number?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer will put that at where the highest need is. And if it's not in, if we're unable to purchase one of those boats, or if we can get one of those in a couple of pipe meters, that's what we'll get. But it'll be a priority. We'll go to our field staff and say, here's what we have. We'll make the best of it. Mr. Chairman, if we, and again, these are all, there are narratives associated with them, but if, because we have talked a little bit about this, I'll just step through these right now. Our second priority was some technical support in our continued dealings with Montana and the Montana v. Wyoming lawsuit. The governor's recommendation is 20,000 there. Be very similar decision-making process if this were approved. Primarily, I wanted some resources if we need to better forecast whether or not we're going to get a call from Montana on the Tongue River. We did last summer, and we struggled through, but we managed it fairly well. Still, we may need some resources to determine when should a call come, when should it be honored, when not. Are our water users at any risk from a call, and how can we better determine when that's appropriate or not? The original request had some high mountain lake water sensors in them so we could track how much we were storing in the winter. That's the kind of thing that probably would not get funded under a reduced amount.
So when you talk about a call, you get a call, they want water, right? Is that what that amounts to?
That's right. Under the law of the river, under the most recent Supreme Court special master decision, our post-compact rights are vulnerable if they have a valid pre-compact shortage. Primarily that is to fill Tongue River Reservoir. Last year in April, I don't know if you remember, but in April we were looking pretty crummy from a snowpack standpoint. It did not look like Tongue River Reservoir was going to fill. They placed a call on April 10th. We began to regulate some of our, hardly anybody was on at that time, but as post-50s wanted to come on, they were not allowed to come on. Then we got Miracle May, and that was wonderful. We got rain from late April to middle of July, and by May 21st, the call came off. Tongue River filled, our reservoirs filled, people came back on, and coming on in May for a lot of our folks was just fine. As long as they can irrigate June, July, and somehow into August, they're going to be far better off. Turning them off or not letting them irrigate in April wasn't so painful. But that's the kind of operation we have to consider now going forward under the Montana v. Wyoming special master report. And even after the case is ultimately disposed, that requirement's going to be out there. That's a priority consideration.
It's going to be a nightmare.
The Attorney General's office does have some funding for the litigation, and that's great. If the case goes away, then that I wanted to have some money to just help put toward any questions that may come up. It could be we may be working with NRCS to improve forecasting, for example. And if both states have to contribute to that, then I'll be able to.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah. Can I ask you, this is a kind of a parochial question because I'm from Sheridan.
Yeah.
Does that water count the diversions out of the Powder River Basin, that come through Story, the old tunnels?
It does. Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, yeah, the water that gets in the system, a lot of that, for example, goes down Prairie Dog Creek.
You're right.
And
Prairie Dog, Piney Creek, Piney Cruz.
Piney Cruz.
And
right.
Mead Creek.
And to the extent that we don't get at this point, it becomes sort of system water after it's been diverted once. And if some of that water is at the bottom of a creek and there's a post-50 water right there and he typically would divert it, if there is a valid call that we have accepted, then they would be foreclosed from diverting that.
Even though it's originally from the Powder River drainage?
Mr. Chairman, that's my understanding, yes.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Yes. So, Pat, when you get a call, what flexibility what can you do to determine whether or not it's actually a valid call?
That's, Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, good question. We get the same thing on the plat. We get to validate the call on the plat. What we want to be able to do is work with Montana to say, what are the opportunities for this thing to fill? If it's going to fill, I don't want to regulate anybody. And so the flexibilities are, as weather changes, as snowpack changes, and as you go through the season, it can come off at any point in time when it appears that filling is going to occur. Right now, we also have the ability, if it's in a very remote location and historically, if there's any chance that it's a futile call, where regulating that particular user off does not put more water back into the system for downstream, say it goes into another basin, for example, then we don't have to. We wouldn't regulate. But generally, these were on main stem diversions where if they took the water, it would come right out of the Tongue River and ultimately not be available downstream.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
So, Pat, what would be the result if you determined that it wasn't a valid call?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, I'd better be pretty damn sure that Tongue River Reservoir is going to fill. What I don't want to do is put us in a compliance event. For example, if we just simply thumbed our nose and didn't regulate, understanding that's now the law of the river. we'd have to be pretty sure the Tongue River Reservoir is going to fill, or if they had a direct flow right that's out of priority, that they were going to get their water some other way. Otherwise, it's very much like on the North Platte, where if we get a what's determined to be an allocation year and we start regulating in February, March, and April, and Inland Lakes is in priority. If I say the call comes off because all of a sudden we got 5 feet of snow in the mountains, that reservoir better fill. If it doesn't, then I think I put myself and our compliance at risk.
Mr. Chairman, one last question.
I have done that once, by the way, in 2003. I lifted a call, and it filled on the last possible day, and Mr. Purcell said, I hope you go to church on Sunday.
So, wow. So I guess the other question would be is, what are the risks, or in your you've been doing this quite a while, what are the risks or in your experience of individuals making calls that aren't, you know, basically they're kind of peremptory. I mean, they make them just because they think they might have a problem. I mean, how does that work itself out?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, typically, for example, this is a little bit different animal, but on your normal call for regulation, the first thing we would do is go to, and let's say it's a direct flow water right, and the guy's short of water. We would make sure that he has a valid water right, that he's got a measuring device, that he is in fact short, and that there are users above him who, if appropriately regulated, would add water to his diversion. So the calling party has some obligation. Valid right, measuring device, they got to be short. That's the kind of process we're still working to put in place with Montana. But you can look at, for example, Tongue River Reservoir, much like Pathfinder. If you've got very little snowpack in the upper North Platte and Pathfinder doesn't look like it's going to fill, it's very difficult. That may be considered a precursor call. But a call for storage is a little different than a direct flow call, which is virtually instantaneous. But that reservoir also has a priority, and it deserves to be respected. And so we just don't want to – we want to be able to respect it, but without turning people off unnecessarily. It can be a little bit of a moving target at times. Hydrology is not static. But a reservoir call is often an early call. They're short. They're not going to fill. They have first right at the water. We typically try, though, to fill reservoirs and regulate other people only in the non-direct flow season. We try to get reservoirs to fill in the non-irrigation season between now and April so that they're not competing with direct flow users in May, June, and July. Okay. Mr. Chairman, the only other things on our list that deal with my agency, we have some board requests on here, but if you look at priority number four, that we have some old ATVs. We're going to see if we can't replace those outside of an exception item. Priority number five, we still struggle at times with broadband access and bandwidth at our divisional offices. We've worked with ETS to try and find a way to connect through what's called the Wyoming Unified Network. And to the extent we can get better connection at Cokeville, Torrington, Riverton, and Sheridan, we will seek to do that. That is the reason for priority number five. We at times are a little slow yet in our field offices, and we move a lot of data. The priorities 6 through 10 are all for either the Engineers Board or the Well Drillers Board, both of which are self-funded and don't use general fund dollars. So these, to some extent, are requests to move a little more money into IT services or payroll, but within their own account. So they're not these requests do not affect general fund. I'm happy to answer questions on them, but they're not part of our general fund request.
Okay.
As you also can see, and maybe I'm pretty sure I'm not the only agency in this particular situation, but a number of the recommendations that have come down have been to fill at least some or part of these requests out of the
LSRA.
Oh, yeah, we had one. you'll indulge me, Mr. Chairman, item 8, priority number 8, scrolled past this. You remember Mr. Labonte talking about $97,000 that we get that comes through water development for the endangered fish program in the Colorado? This is a cost of living increase to that fund of $4,961, so that is not related to the other professional boards, but is simply a cost of living increase to allow us to continue participate in that endangered fish program.
Okay.
Every biennium we're in here with that cost of living increase.
Yes.
I think it was 4, or with the ATVs.
Yeah.
Yes. I was on appropriations 13, 14 years ago, and you're asking for ATVs then. And I assume you've gone through a few more ATVs since then. And I'm just wondering, why isn't that an ongoing expense, just some sort of schedule to replace ATVs on an ongoing basis?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I'm reading you. I kind of wish it was. There are times in the two that we're looking to replace now are 11, 12 years old. We've gotten just yeoman's work.
Yeah, I approve those.
But, yeah, they never have made it into a standard budget item. We've come in, and it's about 50-50. Sometimes we get them approved, and sometimes we don't. And they either linger into the next biennium, or if we're able to fund them some other way get one that way, we'll try to do that to avoid coming back in. So,
well, I guess,
but I wish they were.
I guess my question is, at least in the country I live in, and I'm sure most of the rest of the state, these guys are going into a lot of, guys and girls are going to a lot of rough country quite a bit, and they're wearing out ATVs as fast or faster than anybody else. So why haven't a variation of governors put it in the standard budget as on a regular rotating basis? I mean, Game and Fish basically does it with pickup trucks.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, our vehicles are very much that way. We've never had, like every employee in the field does not have an ATV. We've had a few available in each division. They end up being a fairly small budget item when they do come due. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't think they ever had the whiskers on them to be a legitimate, at least so far, continuing standard budget item, even for replacements. So we don't, we certainly have the, ability with trucks and everything else to be on a schedule for replacement. That's not an issue. These do tend to be a $10,000 or $20,000 item every 3 or 4 years. And I think that may be why. It's a relatively small item.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we, stand for questions on any other submissions we've made to the committee. I've gone through our exception items fairly briefly, but maybe that saved you a little bit of time or headaches by doing so, I hope.
Let me ask you, Pat, I noticed that in your standard budget request for various divisions, the governor has recommended cutting some of your standard budget. Could you address that, please?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I believe that may harken back, at least in part, to the very last slide and that first thing we showed, where we voluntarily provided some cuts that could to address the governor's request back in October. Those various codes have been those givebacks have been acknowledged in the standard budget where they occur.
Okay.
And I think that might be what you're seeing. The total is about $250,000.
So most of those are $900,000.
No. They're already in the budget.
Okay. They're in the budget.
All right.
And we had also provided some 100 series back under a separate request that appeared to us may not be spendable this biennium.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greer.
Just because it's our job to get in the weeds, I'm just looking. I see in the groundwater division and surface water division, we've got an increase in the out-of-state travel budgets. It's not a huge amount, but what's are there conferences or something that are anticipated?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer. What you may be seeing in the as part of a net to zero analysis is a shifting of money from in to out of state or vice versa, depending on what we have seen in a recent biennium or recent year that where we the budget wasn't quite lined up. Hopefully, I don't think we've had any new budget dollar or travel dollars since maybe even the 13-14 biennium. So these are shifts between in-state and out-of-state depending on demand. I would note that our total in-state budget is about 161,000. Our out-of-state budget about 121,000. We do a lot of travel. Our Interstate Streams group does quite a bit around the region. A lot of travel in-state for our field people. We do see a fluctuation in in-state, out-of-state, depending on if our compact commission meetings are held in Montana or Wyoming. If we have more Colorado River meetings in a year than we had last year. So what we try to do is adjust to reflect what we're currently spending on. But my hope is, and my belief is, that these are generally shifts from in-state to out-of-state back and forth and not an increase in general.
And so, Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at, so we've got administration, groundwater, Board of Control. What was the other one I was looking at? And I didn't see that. I saw an overall increase on those. And maybe they were shifted from somewhere else, but if you point out the one where there's a negative, that'd be great. I didn't see it.
If we, I think those are probably most clearly shown in the Chapter 17 report, correct? Which should be available. Let's see if we can find one. I am looking right now at the surface water division. You're in groundwater?
Mm-hmm.
Where we've got, and this would be on page 10 of the budget book, page 10 of the Chapter 17 report, whereas you look down through, there's almost as many adds as there are subtractions and of similar amounts.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I have that. Okay. I'm looking in the budget book on page 31.
All right.
Surface water. And again, these are not large sums, but I see a base budget of in-state at 8,600 increased to 11,000, out-of-state 600 increased to 26. And I think as I go through those.
Oh, okay.
In total, it's not a lot. I was just. If you got a net to zero somewhere, where did you pull those funds from?
My only at this point on that particular line item, my presumption is from another travel line item in another, like Board of Control budget or groundwater. But I'd like to go verify that if I could and get back to you.
Okay, thanks.
Be happy to do that, but rather than speak inappropriately right now.
Thank you. You got to ask the chairman, Don.
We might have an answer here, Mr.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Each of those 200 series on that page has to balance out for a net to zero. So you'll see it actually decreased by about $5,000 from $49,000 to $44,000. They took, it appears, that the agency took most of this from educational recreation supplies, $236. They took $4,700 out of that line and about $2,600 out of 207. And they took the money, excess money in those two lines and put it towards travel in this case.
And so as I say that, the 200 series are in net zero on that or
200 series
or less. Correct. Okay.
So if I indicated another travel budget, I may have been mistaken.
Yes. Oh, okay.
Representative Greer.
All right. Other questions? Any questions on state engineer's budget?
One quick question, Mr. Chairman. On priority six on the state professional land surveyors boards, you've got that increase in payroll. I'm just assuming that's not your instigation, but the board has approved that, and that's where that came from. It's out of their license fees, but I just want to make. It's on page 50 and 51.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, you're talking about the payroll?
Yes.
Yes, that was, first of all, approved by that board. A couple of years ago, the board not only verified or more strongly codified their how they could be reimbursed, but also went from 7 to 9 members. So they did some analysis on what that impact of the payroll would be and are just simply asking to be able to spend it in that way.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Any other questions? Well, thank you. Okay. Representative Greer.
This is one of the budgets I have to present, so I was trying to. So if I'm looking at priority 7, and again on page 51 where Senator Perkins was, and so we've got $10,000 to help with the reporting with the Wolf system, but what were we doing beforehand is on the payroll, isn't that?
This is for Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, the upgrades, for example, this board has recently changed their registration licensing software. And I think what they're looking for in this particular request is some ability to add some additional programming to that package to more easily interface with the Wolf system, if that makes sense, because they do their receipting of renewal amounts, any other fees that come in, and they want to make sure that they can talk back to the Wolf system when they do that. So it's a way to they got kind of a bare bones system to start with, and as they see additional needs on their new licensing software, they want to be able to add that component to it.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'm just trying to tie together some other things I've heard over the months that $10,000 allows this board to go ahead and communicate seamlessly with the Wolf system.
Just compare their reports with
it's about $15 million.
They're
right. The additional information that Cricket is providing me is that it allows them, maybe not a direct interface, but to compare their reports with what they have to submit under Wolf, so that it's apples and apples. So it's either electronic or it's the ability to do so.
So, Mr. Chair, so it's not an interface with their system. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is being kind of nitpicky, but back on page 31 with your object code 223 for permanently assigned vehicles, it looks like it's $150 going down to $30. And then on 233, for motor vehicle and airplane supplies, from $3 to $167.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, can you direct me to that line again?
Yeah, it's page 31, and when you go down to the object codes 0223, which is permanently assigned vehicles, it has $150, and then we're going down to $30, and I would love to get that $30 car. And then when you go down three lines further to object code 0233, which looks like motor vehicle and airplane supplies, it was $3, but now it's jumped to $167. They're typos, I assume. But
Mr. Chairman, Representative Connolly, one thing I can assure you, it has nothing to do with an airplane. But we will figure out it may be a coding issue, something we can look into. Cricket will. We can get back to you on that. But it could very well be a typo.
It's just a line.
Yeah, it's motor vehicles and airplane supplies.
But thank you. And the dollar figure just seems way too low for anything meaningful.
That particular division has no permanently assigned vehicles. So.
$1,000%
We tried to be prepared for any question, and I wasn't quite ready for that one.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative.
Pat, you made a statement that if you couldn't get the $26,325 for ATVs, you might be able to fund it some other way. How might that be?
For example, Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz, if we find that we are able to use one quite a bit for dam safety, it is conceivable we could look under the FEMA grant for that money. If we had any equipment or supplies that had been going to an ATV, in our North Platte, for example, we had some money, and those people have to do reservoir or irrigated acreage inspections that may have had ATVs before. If we can replace that, then we'll do that if it's in that division. But that's the kind of flexibility we'd look for.
A follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
How many ATVs do you have?
We don't have a whole lot. Eight or ten, probably. Maybe a few more. Not a whole lot.
And none of them are on a replacement schedule.
I don't believe so, Mr. Chairman. Representative Moniz. As I said earlier, I kind of wish they were, and maybe that's something we should look forward to doing and just biting that in the bullet and doing it.
Don't hold your breath.
Okay. Anything further? Well, thank you, Pat, for your presentation. Particularly the PowerPoint, that's helpful. So we'll wrap up today's business, I think, at this point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
You bet. Tomorrow we will start at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock?
Yep, and Chairman Harshman will be running the whole shindig.
Chairman Harshman.
Yeah.
State Parks, Cultural Resources, Department of Workforce Services, Department of Family Services, and the Public
Defender. Tomorrow.
Are we still on the record, or are we done? Are we on the record, or are we done?
We're done.
Turn the mic up.